Hi guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Smart Stuff Furniture, who, as the name suggests, makes smart furniture solutions for babies, kids, and teens with hidden features like secret storage, built-in lights, and easy access outlets. To learn more and find your closest smart shop, visit smartstufffurniture.com/YHL. I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're sharing a simple trick for choosing light fixtures that look good together, and how a recent weekend getaway turned into research for our beach house. Plus, it turns out I'm really bad at something that most people can do without even trying.
Hi guys.
Hey guys.
We both said guys.
Well, for anyone who follows us on Instagram, you saw that we recently sort of stole away for a weekend, for a long 3-day weekend trip out to Charlottesville, which is a city that's just like an hour west of us here in Richmond, Virginia. It's actually where I went to college, but that's not the reason we went. It's just we wanted to like get out of town because the kids had a day off of school, and we also wanted to try Airbnb for the first time.
You heard it here first, folks. We had never tried Airbnb until this moment. We had been to other people's Airbnbs, like when friends came to town. Even when we were at Alt, we went to like a fancy Airbnb that some of the people who were attending Alt had rented. It had like a fire pit and a pool. It was like very
snazzy. Yeah, ours was not that fancy. But I think we were kind of inspired by that conversation we had with Dana Miller from House Tweaking. That was back in episode 33. And she talked about how they were trying to take more trips with their kids, and she really had a lot of fun hunting on Airbnb for these cool places. And so I wanted to do the same thing, and it was harder than I thought it was going to be. Like, I thought Airbnb was going to help me like curate these really
you
stylish
it was, like,
places. Yeah, I mean, it was really taking a lot more time to sort through and find things. Like, I even actually for a little bit ducked over to that Kid & Co. website I've heard some people talk about that has like kid-friendly homes specifically, but there aren't really that many of them, and most of them are in bigger cities.
And we also were bringing our dog with us, so that I feel like there were like lots of things.
That would be Pet & Co.
Yeah, we had lots of needs per se. But one thing we didn't really feel like we needed, especially also inspired by Dana, was a lot of space. So this was sort of like a social experiment. It was 700 square feet, and it was me, John, two kids, and a dog. And like, a dog is not just a dog. It comes with a crate and the food and the water and all the things. And of course, the kids come with the pack and play and all the things. So
yeah, I was a little nervous at first because we were just having trouble finding like, where did the suitcases go? Because like one of the closets had been converted into a washer and dryer area. So we figured it out. We found spots for everything. And then once we kind of settled through the initial panic of where does everything go, it ended up being a really perfect size for the weekend because we were only there for 2 nights.
Yeah, it was quaint. We all ended up cuddling on the couch. I totally see all those quotes that are like, the smaller the house you have, the more family time you spend together. I think there were definitely reasons that it would not work all the time for us. I mean, when our son was napping, it was really, really hard to keep our daughter quiet and ourselves quiet. You know, the bathroom was right next to the room where he was sleeping, and it was the only bathroom in the whole house.
I kept thinking, where the heck would we record a podcast?
Yeah, that would be hard.
Like, sometimes we rely on them being asleep upstairs where they are not going to hear us jabbering away. We would need a separate podcasting Airbnb.
Exactly. A little shed outside.
But I will put a link to the cottage that we stayed in for anyone else who is interested in staying there. You can also see some of the pictures of our Instagram. That will all be in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. The other reason we wanted to try Airbnb out for the first time is because it is something that we're considering using to rent out our beach house. And we figured, like, we should actually be customers of it before we are actually hosts.
Exactly. I think we feel like we know how to do a beach rental because John's family has had a beach rental for a decade. And they, you know, we see how they manage things and how they have a storage closet and how they deal with the keys. And
I think he uses VRBO. My dad
right.
does.
And yeah, the thing that we appreciate about Airbnb is it's sort of like full of cool homes.
They're there somewhere.
They're not all cool. But I think it would sort of be a fun way that people could find our beach house because a lot of people seem to be Airbnb-ing. But I'm really not clear about how I want to decorate the beach house. Sometimes I think I want all these books and all these blankets and so much cozy and all the...
The way you would decorate our house.
Exactly. I save things. Like if I have an extra planter that's not in use, I'm like, oh, I'll save that planter and I'll put it at the beach house. I have Tupperware bins in the attic because I'm trying to be organized about this. But then after staying at this little cottage, it made me realize you do not need that much. And it still can look beautiful. There were 3 or 4 books in the whole house. I read all of them. There was like a design book on the coffee table I read. There was this like book slash catalog that IKEA had put out, but I didn't realize it was IKEA till I got to the end. It was just like how people lived in different countries. But I kind of liked that there wasn't so much around, because actually the Novogratz had said this to us when we interviewed them, but they said, when you have kids, you kind of kid-proof the house. Right. And it means if there's like a lot of tchotchkes around, you have to move them. And in this instance, there was like really nothing the kids could hurt or the dog could hurt. There were definitely things where she told us like, hey, in the second drawer of the media cabinet, there's toys for the kids, which was so nice of her. She left us some snacks and some wine. She
put fresh flowers in every room.
Yes.
She was a really good host. And I think this rental was just a rental property. Like, I don't think anyone lives there full time, because like you were saying, there wasn't a whole lot of extra stuff in it. Like the fridge was empty except for like the wine and milk that she left us.
Yes. It was so nice of her.
It also was helpful. Like, we literally broke out our tape measure and we're measuring the sizes of the rooms, because our beach house is about 1,800 square feet. So it's noticeably bigger than the 700 square foot two-bedroom cottage we stayed in, but ours is going to have 4 bedrooms. It's going to have 3 bathrooms versus one. So it doesn't necessarily mean the bedrooms are bigger. Like, the bedroom that we stayed in is probably about the size of the master bedroom that we're going to have, we realized.
Right. I think in measuring it, we realized ours is just going to be a little bit bigger.
But it was helpful because it made me feel less panicked about the size of ours, because I worried that ours were going to be too small. But that was totally great.
Yeah. It was really comfortable. And I think it helped us envision, you know, when you could stand in something with walls, it helps you see it better than when you walk through a house with framing or you look at a blueprint. This was like a decorated room. So we could see, oh, they have a full-size bed, but there's a closet next to it, which is the only reason they couldn't have a queen or a king. So it was nice to realize, like, we still will be able to fit a big bed. I'd be really thrilled if it felt as welcoming as that bedroom did.
Yeah, I think it was a great exercise in realizing how functional we can make our rental without overdoing it.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, because I realized some of the things in there were just simple. It was like a slip-covered chair, and they can wash the slipcover. The TV cabinet was an old dresser. They had like really great style, awesome, deep, moody paint colors. And it just reminded me, like, it's not about filling the house with expensive designer items. You can have a very comfortable house and just use like functional pieces that look pretty with easy things. Like the kitchen table was this old beat up wooden table. And I love that, because I thought, oh, like, you're not worried about drink rings here.
Right. Our kids said they wanted to move there because they thought there was no school.
Right. Like, there's no school in this city. Let's live here.
I was like, well, there's no school at home right now because it's a weekend. So let's live there where your stuff is. Also, some people had asked us sort of like what we did in Charlottesville, because I did go to school there, but we didn't really spend any time on the college campus. I highly recommend the place we ate for dinner, which was called Oakheart Social.
Yes, it was so good.
We found it by accident, but it ended up being great. Mm-hmm. And also the next morning we ate at a place called Brazos, which everyone on our Instagram was like,
when we said tacos, they were like, I hope you went to Brazos. Yeah,
they were like, I hope that's where you went. Yes, we went there. It was also great because it opened up to this big art park. I don't know if it's called IX or 9 art park. It's the Roman numeral, I think. But it had all this cool like sculpture that the kids could play on and walk around, and, you know, random toys and bikes out. And so they had a great time down there.
It was
there.
The opposite of like a newfangled plastic playground.
There was also a giant sculptured butt.
Yes, it was like blotchy. It looked very much like a butt.
Whose butt are you looking at?
It had a tattoo that said mom on it.
No, it had a tattoo that said butt on
oh,
it.
Oh, you're right. It did say butt.
It was like that mom tattoo with the heart and the banner.
Right, but instead butt. Of saying mom, it said butt. That was a funny photo op.
But anyways, it was a fun trip. You know, we got to do some cool things, have some good quality family time. We got to try out Airbnb. We got to see this weird art park.
Yeah, and my favorite thing about vacations is that when you're staying in someone else's house, you don't have all the like laying on the couch at home feeling guilty like you should be doing something, like you should be cleaning or you should be organizing something in the garage. Like, I was walking around reading her books. Like, I had nothing to do.
That's why we did it, Sherry. We did bring our computers. We opened them a couple times, but it was just to watch Netflix. So I consider that a win.
Totally.
So I guess that's what's new with us. And now we've got some updates.
There were 3 emails that were sort of updates to things we talked about that were so funny, I just felt like it was time we read them. So this first one was an Instagram comment from Rebecca Essler. She says, I had a dream you painted your house pinch. Yes, pinch. In my dream, you said, it's not pink and it's not peach. It's pinch.
It's kind of funny that you don't call it pinch. I mean, we have like grello and grayish. Like, wouldn't pink and peach be pinch?
It's so funny because my brain is not that smart in a dream. In a dream, what would make sense in my head, I'd wake up and be like, that's not even the combination of those 2 words. Like, I'd be calling it like, oh yeah, porch. But like, when I'd wake up, I'd be like, porch isn't pink.
That's peach and pork.
Exactly.
You know, the color of pork.
Our subtle inspiration pork. Was pork. I also got an email from Sarah Murky, and this is in response to episode 28, where I had waxed poetic about my jeans and how much I'm obsessed with these new black jeans. They're perfect for short girls. And she wrote, and she said, "So I just had to write and thank you for the jean recommendation on your podcast. I'm 5'1", and I abhor shopping for jeans. The jeans you endorsed fit perfectly. Cue the choir of angels. You've changed my life. I wish I were only being dramatic, but it's the truth."
I was going to say, that's quite the dramatic statement.
It's the truth, John. I changed your life. They are the best jeans. I'm linking to them in the show notes again. Anyone short, I fought 2 pairs because I'm that obsessed and I never want to be without them in my life. So when the first pair gets worn out and goes south, I have a backup pair.
But what if you grow?
That's true.
What if you shrink?
If I grow, they'll just be the normal length that they're supposed to be on tall people. They're supposed to be a cropped, like almost like a capri. But on me, they're just regular length.
Okay. So they're flexible.
Exactly. And the last message is from Becky Kidder. She at mentioned us on another Instagram picture. And upon further inspection, it was from Questlove. You know,
from The Tonight Show?
Yeah. Like
from The Roots?
From The Roots. And I guess he shared a picture of a float tank. And so she at mentioned us and says, "Look at you and Questlove just living your best lives."
We are so much alike. That was what, episode 33? We talked float tanks?
Yeah. We'll put links in the show notes to all these references in case you're new at tuning in but haven't heard these other episodes. But the main takeaway is that you guys are hilarious and it's so fun to hear from you. And I really feel like pinch should be a color.
Yeah.
Essentially, that's where this
that's
is going.
That's the conclusion.
It is so catchy. Not like porch. Porch is not going to get John, but pinch has a chance.
Stop trying to make porch happen.
But now it's time for a little segment that we like to call, "Well, that's embarrassing." Who would think it would be so hard to take a bath? But I've attempted to take a bath twice, and it is a comedy of errors. You know how I was saying I never take baths? We've been talking about the bathroom. Do I want a soaker tub? And then I revealed, well, in 3.5 years of living here, I haven't taken a single bath. And so one night, it was bath time for the kids. So there was bathing going on in the other bathroom. And I decided this is a prime mommy moment. I'll sneak away. John took the wheel, and I'm going to go take a bath. So I do my patented lock the door and turn on the fan so I don't hear anything in there. It becomes my own personal sanctuary. And I turn on the water. And I turn it to all the way hot because we've established I like super scalding water. And I can take a shower with it all the way hot. So I put the drain thing in. We don't have one of those that's like built into the bottom of the tub.
Broke.
It's a cap that you put on the drain and it like, if you're lucky, it stays. And so about halfway through, I run in there worried I'm overflowing it. And it's only halfway filled. But the water has already turned cold. This is my first mistake. I was doing it at the same time as bath time for the kids. So other baths happening.
And we stole your water.
Exactly. But I went in anyway thinking half of it's full of scalding water. It still won't be that cold. But I was immediately cold and the drain wasn't holding. So as I'm laying in the tub with my like half my ears under the water trying to relax, I could hear like...
That's because you had the worst cover.
Right. We have 2 plugs.
The better one is in the kids' bathroom.
Right. The kids' bathroom has the good plug. So I was using kind of the janky plug. And so my bath lasted like 4 minutes and my hair only got half wet. My knees, I don't think, were ever submerged. Like only half my body was under this water that wasn't even warm. And I was like stomping around mad. Like, this was dumb. I never should have done this. And then I texted all my friends and I was like, "Baths are stupid. Do you like baths?" And they were like, "You have to set the scene for the bath. There need to be candles. You need to have all the hot water." And I was like, "Okay, it's really on me. I did this wrong." So I decided to give bathing one more shot. It was during the day. The kids were gone. It was basically my lunch break. And instead of like sitting around having a leisurely meal, I scarfed something and ran and turned on the bath. And I used the good plug. I stole the good plug from the kids' bathroom and I put it on scalding again because I was like, if I run out, at least the base will be scalding. Like I did not put it on the temperature that would be good to submerge myself in from the get-go because I worried it would start to get cold. So scalding water on, babysitting it for 10 minutes while it fills, while it fills, while it fills. I turn it off and it's still hot water. I'm thrilled. And it's 1,000 degrees. So like hotter than any hot tub.
Oh, you overcompensated.
I overcompensated. So then I was like, what is wrong with me?
Wait, and we also reached a threshold that is too hot for you?
I mean, maybe in a shower I can have it that hot because it's just peppering your body, but you can't like submerge your body in that hot is the only way I can describe it. It was like so hot when it was a solid mass of water. It even hurt my hand. Like I almost was burning my hand to reach down to get the plug because what I realized I had to do was like drain a little bit of it and put cold water in. I was like a mixologist. digest, guys. This was like when you're trying to make egg salad and it gets too runny and then you add stuff to make it more solid and then it gets too solid and then you add stuff to make it more runny.
This is a flawless analogy.
I don't know why I picked egg salad for this. I was mixing and literally I was using my arm like a big spoon in the tub. I was like churning the water because all the hot water was at the end of the tub and all the cold water was at the other end of the tub. And I finally mixed it and I got it the right temperature. And I was like, what is wrong with me that I cannot take a proper bath? But then you guys, it was awesome. It took like 40 minutes to get it right. I took like a 15-minute bath because then I had to be back to work. But it was fantastic. And my tub is way too shallow. So like my knees, my neck, a lot of my body was out of the water the whole time. But I was thinking in my head, change of plans again. Now I want a tub. But I think what I can do is I just need a few more inches of length and a few more inches of depth. So what I think we can accomplish is do a soaker tub plus shower combo. It's not going to be so tall and so high we can't step into it to shower, but it will also work for a bath. I just need a little bit more length. So I do have to move the tub somewhere, but I'm going to figure it out. And I won't need like a separate shower and a separate tub. So I think we can fit it.
Yeah, I've been looking at it and thinking there's a way that we can get a tub in there somehow with a shower and not even bump into the closet at all. But that's down the road.
Point of the story, I didn't know how to take a bath and it took me a few tries. So judge that however you'd like.
You were just rusty.
I was really rusty.
Well, not to add insult to injury, but I have a game for you. We often call this quiz portion What's Not, because I like to give Sherry a list of things in a certain category in which most are real, but one I've made up, and she has to tell me what's real and what's not. And this one is actually a follow-up to a quiz from episode 37. Remember, that's when we had the list of things a woman should never, ever have in her home.
Never, ever.
Yes, when I was Foghorn Leghorn, not Yosemite Sam. As I was linking to that, I noticed that Elle Decor had also done a list for men.
Oh, were they like equally condescending to guys?
I actually was not so offended by this one. I actually thought these were some good tips. Oh. I don't know if this is just because like they more correctly identified some pitfalls that men, I guess, bachelors fall into. And they weren't necessarily all framed as like, this is so that you can find a romantic partner.
Right. It's not all about someone will run screaming away from your house.
It was more like so that you have a grown up looking place.
Okay. Got it.
So this is from Elle Decor's list of 16 things a man should never, ever have in his home. I'm going to give you five. You have to tell me which is the fake one. Number one, a sectional.
Wait, they're saying you shouldn't have it?
Yes, these are things men should not have in their home.
You shouldn't have a sectional. Well, you wouldn't make that up because it is confusing because I feel like we have a sectional.
Oversized leather furniture.
I feel like that's real.
Colorful sheets.
That could be the plant.
Colorful bath towels.
One of those is the plant.
And reproduction Roman columns.
I think colorful sheets is the plant. Final answer.
You are correct.
Yay! I figured it out. You know why? Because I have totally heard the like, stop having colorful towels. Just have white towels. And I've also heard have white bed covers. But I have never heard a designer say don't have fun, colorful sheets. Because I think even like Nate Berkus designs like navy patterned ones. And so I was on to you, Peterson.
Yeah, that I had a hard time coming up with a fake one because, again, I thought they were good tips.
No, but not sectional. That's terrible.
Well, so this is their explanation of sectional. This is the same thing where they kind of asked designers for tips. And they said that almost anything can be used in a man's interior if some level of discernment is used. So they're acknowledging that there are good sectionals. But they were sort of saying there's no proper context for a kickback sectional with cup holders.
Oh, they're saying like a Lazy Boy recliner sectional.
They say it's the laziest piece of upholstery on earth.
Huh. Well, that's interesting because a lot of high-end designers use sectionals. So we know that like it's a bad sectional, not all sectionals.
Right. I also like that on oversized leather furniture, they said it's like you were trying to scream, I am a man.
I want to eat all the meat and wear a loincloth. I am the man.
And they did have some things that overlap with the women's list, like fake plants. Again, we debated last time that...
Paper flowers, yeah. Always yes.
I don't know if a man should have paper flowers.
I mean, I think he could.
Better than dead flowers.
Yes, exactly.
They say, if you have a job, have real plants.
Oh, that is a burn, though.
Yeah.
That is a burn.
And they also did say you should not have pictures of your parents in your bedroom because it's just not sexy.
Huh. So they were a little bit sexist to the guys, too.
Yeah, they kind of wove some of it in there.
They got those singers in there, yeah.
But I think a lot of it, I was like, well, yeah, you shouldn't have, like, they said a beanbag chair next to your video game console, which is
well,
like,
that's an obvious.
That has a time and a place.
Right.
But if you're trying to have a, like, grown-up looking space, that's probably not the time or place.
Right.
So I will put a link to this in the show notes so you can see all 16 things on the list. And I should say congrats on getting one right.
Woohoo!
Well, I think up next we've got a listener call. And this one comes from Jill.
Hi, Sherry and John. This is Jill Amer from Indiana, and I'm calling about a question regarding matching light fixtures. We recently tore down a wall between our kitchen and family room, and we've got 3 glass globe pendants hanging above the peninsula. But I also need to match a living room or the family room light fixture. The dining room opens up to this, and then I need another light fixture hanging from the kitchen. And I'm having trouble finding ones that aren't too matchy-matchy. Could you help? Thank you so much. Bye.
I like this question because I think it is something that's hard, and I think it's something that we have gotten wrong on a few occasions and still, I think, struggle with sometimes. Probably the simple answer for it is that you want to find light fixtures that relate to one another in at least shape, style, era, or finish or material.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be all of them. It just has to be at least one of them, I think, ties them together.
Right. And that's a good way if you're going, like Jill's saying, to get things that coordinate but don't necessarily match. I mean, obviously the easy thing if you really are afraid about things clashing is like just buy matching fixtures. Like a lot of places will sell like a line of things where it comes as a pendant and a chandelier and a sconce and you get them. They have the exact same like globe shape and finish. Like that's the easy way. But I think Jill is someone like us who likes to mix things a little bit and so that each room has its own lighting personality and we get to play with different fixtures a bit more. And so one easy way that we've made sure that across rooms our lights sort of work together is to make sure that they have the same metal finish, like on the stem or the canopy. Like in our kitchen, we've got those 3 pendants over our island that all have polished nickel stems and canopies. And in the dining room, which is right next door, the chandelier in there also has a polished nickel stem and canopy. The lights themselves are very different. We've got like a Capiz chandelier in the dining room, and we've got these metal dome pendants that are painted in the kitchen, but they still sort of work together. They feel like they belong in the same house because of this one material that connects them.
Yeah, I think the key is that they're not twins, they're not even brothers and sisters, but they're like distant cousins. And that's okay. When you see them in the same line of sight, like if you're standing in the kitchen looking past through to the dining room, your eye catches the ceiling, which is its own plane. And so a lot of times I think we don't really recognize that the ceiling is like its own wall. And if a room is open to another room, you can catch that whole plane of the ceiling throughout those spaces. And if one has, you know, a brass canopy bumping out and then your eye travels maybe 8 more feet and there's a stainless steel canopy that's maybe more sleek and has like squared edges than the more antique-y looking canopy of the first light, your eye, since it's all one plane, can pick up on those discrepancies a lot more and they can tend to look like mistakes or mismatched choices when in reality you just were trying to be eclectic or add interest. So I definitely don't think you have to always match the metal, and I've seen people do it successfully without matching, but it is a great way to tie them together and sort of automatically make them relate in that one way.
Well, we don't even do it in our house because we've got in the foyer an oil rub bronze light fixture, that kind of starlight fixture, but it does coordinate with the dining room, which is off the foyer, because both of the fixtures feature glass as one of the main materials. You've got the Capiz, which is kind of like a, you know, translucent glass, and then the glass in the foyer fixture is kind of a seated glass. So both of them look similar enough that you kind of see how they belong in the same house.
Yes. And I think they also share in common sort of this geometric quality.
Right.
And you hardly ever see them together. You have to stand in a perfect spot in our kitchen to catch both of them.
Or at the bottom of the stairs.
Yeah. Or at the bottom of the stairs, you see them together. But when you do, you're like, that's so random. Why do those work? Because they seem so different in finish. But I really think it's because the other material ties them together.
But that hasn't always worked for us. Like, if you think about our kitchen, Sherry, before we renovated, we had a little of a tough time figuring out the lights there because we had one in the kitchen area, one over the breakfast table, and we also had one over the sink.
Oh, yeah. And we were trying. We even mood boarded it and they looked fine together in a mood board. We chose this like big quatrefoil shade with an interesting sculptural shape and this really interesting pendant that had 3 tiers of sort of circular rope that hung over the eat-in table. But I think the problem with those two, although they coordinated in color because the pendant that was a quatrefoil was tan.
Yeah, they both had kind of a natural material.
Right. The problem, I think, was they both were competing for the like showstopper of the room. Like they both had a very large scale. So the 3-tiered pendant over the dining table was bigger than the quatrefoil pendant, but the quatrefoil pendant was maybe 24 inches wide. It was a huge pendant for a ceiling. And in a normal sized height room, you know, we have 8-foot ceilings. There were two really big lights in there, sort of fighting each other for attention. The other thing to think about, I think, is always a good tip just when choosing a light fixture is if something is not going to be centered or make sense in the room as much, oftentimes I like to just pop a can light in there. You know, people also call those recessed lights in the ceiling. I know that's really boring, but it's a way that something won't be jutting out and really big, sort of off-centered in a room or off-centered on a window. An example would be when we were redoing our kitchen, we really contemplated putting sconces over the windows in our kitchen. We thought that's such a beautiful look. A lot of rooms we pin on Pinterest had these beautiful gold or chrome sconces, but they wouldn't have been centered in other places in the room. Our windows weren't placed in spots that we wanted the center of the window to be sort of like accented by a metallic feature like a pendant light or a sconce. And so that's why in our entire kitchen, we just have 3 pendants over the island, which are centered and they're all the same. And then the rest of our entire kitchen is just can lights, even over our sink, even over our window on the other side of the room. We just have small mini cans in the ceiling to illuminate the room, but not compete with those 3 pendants that we just chose to be the stars in the center of the room.
And I think if you do want to go with a more eclectic, collected look, you can break a lot of these rules and you can get light fixtures that don't necessarily go together. You know, if you want like a 50s Sputnik light and then an antique chandelier in the next room, like go for it. Just know that those things are not going to look necessarily coordinated and they might sort of call attention to themselves.
Yeah, you'll get that eclectic, like mismatched look more than you'll get that like super planned coordinated look. And it's really about your comfort level. I mean, we certainly have fun in kids' rooms, for example, with interesting light fixtures that are off of a main hallway, which has a more traditional light fixture, and maybe off of a guest room, which again has a more traditional fixture. So it's really all about how much you want things to coordinate. I also love tying light fixtures in with other items. For example, in our office, we have an oil rub bronze fixture, and then we have an oil rub bronze curtain rod over the window. And those two things are sort of both in the high plane of the room. And I just think that also helps. Sometimes a light fixture doesn't fully click and fit into a room until the objects around the light fixture come together. So if you replace the dining room fixture with something really modern that matches those glass pendants in your kitchen, you might think, oh, this looks so off, until you maybe bring in the accessories on top of the buffet or some decorative vases on a side cabinet in there that match the finish and sort of complete the story of that room.
Yeah, well, and I would say generally if a light fixture makes sense in a room, like it looks like it belongs there with the other furnishings and decor, and your rooms feel connected to one another, like your living room flows nicely to your dining room or your kitchen, then it's likely that the light fixtures are going to work well together too.
But one good thing about your 3 pendants being glass is that they're so neutral.
Yeah, that's basically a neutral when it comes to light fixtures.
It just goes with everything. They're very classic. So I would just look to them to be the base and the starting point for maybe what finish they have in the canopy and go from there.
Or bring in some more glass items.
Exactly. And actually, I'm thinking it would be fun to make a mood board or two to show you guys how light pairings can mix together. So I'm going to make some of those and put them in the show notes for you guys.
So thanks for your question, Jill. If anyone else has a question they'd like us to tackle on air, you can leave us a voicemail. Our phone number is 571, the number 4, YHLHAP. And now before we dive into our digging, we're going to take a quick break.
As you guys know, this week's episode is brought to you by Smart Stuff Furniture, who you may remember as the company who made over the nursery for a family who found viral video fame after grandma tipped over and fell into her granddaughter's crib.
You can see that viral video along with the room makeover and the family's reaction by visiting smartstufffurniture.com/YHL. But we actually called up Nikki, the mother of the baby, to find out how she's been liking the new space.
Well, now that you've had a chance to live with your makeover, what's one of your favorite changes in the room?
My favorite is at night when I go to put her down for bed. I always rock her just a little bit and love on her, and it's my time to cuddle with her. And I love that I just wave my hand right underneath her little side table and a nightlight shoots out at the bottom, and it's just so nice. I mean, every night I wave my hand under there and I think about how amazing it is. It's so cool.
That built-in nightlight is just one of the many family-friendly features that you'll find in Smart Stuff Furniture.
Yeah, they've also got headboards with reading lights that tuck away, desks and tables with easy access outlets, and even dressers and mirrors with secret storage compartments, all made to be safe and stylish too.
You can see more of their smart features and Nikki's makeover at smartstufffurniture.com/YHL.
And now for everybody's favorite music, or at least our favorite music,
we're digging music.
Music. So this week I'm digging a paint roller, a very specific type of paint roller that has a little bit of mystery behind it because I have no idea where this came from. I was painting some bookcases that are my grandma's. She needed one of them repainted because it got scratched. And I was digging around in my kind of bucket of painting supplies because I was hoping to have a mini foam roller around so that I could roll the bookcase. And all I found was this half-open bag of these rollers that are by a brand called Whizz, W-H-I-Z-Z. And since it was the only thing I had on hand, I was like, okay, I'll use it. The weird thing about it, which I didn't totally understand at first, but now is my favorite feature, is they're called concave rollers. So picture a normal foam roller, those white ones, that have the convex end to it.
Right, they look like a pencil eraser that you erased a little bit
with. Yeah, it's kind of rounded on the end. So that's
normal foam roller.
Yes, that's convex.
Right? I remember, concave is like a cave. It goes in.
Exactly. So that's what these rollers do. They go in. And the reason that's helpful is because it gives you an actual kind of edge.
Oh, you can get a clean line?
Well, that, and also you can get into things a lot better because with the normal foam roller, you can't really paint an end very well because if you scrape all the way up to the edge, you might drag it in that
convex
area. This is
so smart.
Area.
You know, when you started talking, I was like eyes glazing over.
You're like, foam math, roller. Math.
Foam How rollers. Can a foam roller be any better than another foam roller? But now I'm like, when you're painting the inside of a drawer, the inside of a bookcase, like any inside right angle, often when you're painting the back side, you're scratching the side. So if you take that element out.
Well, and here was the proof point for me also. These bookcases from my grandma have kind of these really traditional knobby legs. That fits nicely into this concave end. And so I could almost kind of like circle around it with that end pressed and actually get into the crevices where normally I'd have to use a paintbrush to get into all those lines. But I could almost paint this entire bookcase with a roller. But I still don't know where it came from.
I know. It's like a magical paint roller leprechaun just like left that
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, I mean, there was only one left in the two pack. So clearly I had used
You're lucky it still had a wrapper. You'd have no idea what this
Seriously,
roller was.
I Googled like gray foam roller and I was just getting a bunch of like running foam rollers for stretching out your muscles. Like I was having no luck. But then I realized I had the wrapper in the trash. So I dug it out specifically for this segment. It looks like they are definitely on Amazon. I couldn't find them listed on Home Depot or Lowe's.
I bet we ordered them from Amazon a long time ago, and then we just forgot. You know how sometimes you put things in your cart to get over the like $50 limit to get free shipping? I bet we were like, we need foam rollers.
I don't know. I think it like Magical Elf just brought them in and then used one of them.
Right, exactly. You've used this before. It just didn't make any impression on you.
Right, exactly. It's not till I was painting this very specific bookcase that I realized the miracle that is this concave roller. I'll put a link to them in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. Based on the price on Amazon, they are a little bit pricier than your normal foam roller. A 10-pack of these is $20, where I found some other normal ones that were more like in the $13, $14 range.
But I still think $2 a thing is not bad, right?
I think it's worth it. Although I also just found a pack of normal ones I now have to use up.
Well, my We're Digging this week is a book. And actually, John read the book first.
Yeah, you have me to thank for this, everyone.
Yes. And then he was like, you've got to read this. And I was reading another book. I was like, relax, let me finish my other book. And then he like basically watched me finish my other book because he was dying for me to start this new one.
Well, the backstory is that this was before we were going to Palm Springs for that conference. And I didn't have a book that I was currently reading. So we were at Target the night before. And I was like, I need something. And I'm not ashamed to admit, I only picked it because it had a plane on the cover and we were about to get on a plane.
And then as he's reading it, he's like, this really has hardly anything to do with the plane on the cover. Like, this is not an airline pilot story. But it's called The Kind Worth Killing by Peter Swanson. I would put this up there with Girl on the Train and Gone Girl, both of which I read and really loved. I mean, you loved it,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. I would say it's very Gone Girl-ish because it also has the kind of dueling narrators. Like, each chapter, it changed the perspective.
Yes. It's very dark.
As hinted by the title, The Kind Worth Killing.
Right. If you've read Gone Girl and Girl on the Train and you can stomach sort of that weird stuff that happens, there are twists just like that in this book. I'd say this book is more unexpected. There are more twists and I couldn't call it as easily. I tried really hard to call what was going to happen and I couldn't.
The basic plot of it, because we can give a certain amount away without revealing more than what's on the jacket. A man discovers that his wife is cheating on him with the contractor that's working on their vacation home.
Their beach house. So John
starts
reading
this. It's not a beach
house.
It's not a beach house.
You know what it is? It's on the ocean.
Oh, but yeah, it's in Maine though.
Oh, okay. But John's reading it and he keeps going, don't cheat on me with the contractor. And I'm like, what's happening to your brain that you're saying that? And he's like, my book's getting in my head.
I said, you read this book and find out what happens if you do.
Oh yeah, because then he wants to kill her.
Yeah, so he starts plotting her murder with the help of someone that he meets in the airport, which is how the airplane comes into play very briefly.
And then don't give anything else away. Yeah. After that, 7,000 twists. And maybe it will be a movie someday. And you can say, I heard about it on Young Housewives
Podcast. Yeah, I mean, we're no Oprah, but if we had a book club, this would be in it, guys.
Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where you get a book recommendation. You get a book recommendation. Everybody gets a book recommendation.
And if you enjoyed this week's episode, we'd really be grateful if you took a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes. They help new people discover the show, which helps us keep this thing going. So thanks.
And keep telling us what you do while you listen, like Miss Josephine03 on Instagram, who listened while walking her puppies in negative 15 degree weather in Alaska.
And head over younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus links, photos, and info from this episode, like photos of that Airbnb we stayed in and some light fixtures that Sherry loves together.
And a photo of me standing in front of that giant sculpture of a butt.
Later. And I could actually go around kind of like the ball. How do I want to say this?
Go around the ball.
And I could almost kind of rub it around. Let me think about this for a second so it doesn't sound dirty.